Hey, everybody. Welcome. Good morning. Glad to have you. Let's see. I think we have a couple of people on. A few people are going to join late, I'm told. So let's jump in with anybody who would like to start. I think we have, let's see. Yeah. Looks like nobody. There we go.
Hey, Shane. Looking for, so we've got a manager who's not wanting to manage, and that he's
like that.
Simple problem, right?
I like that. Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
but
well, let me see if I can fix it. You don't have to tell me anymore. Let me think about that.
He's good at his base job, and so we're willing to make so he's a good pharmacist, just not a good manager, or doesn't want to do the management skills. He's at least looked at that in life and said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to hire. I don't want to fire. I don't want to do those things. So he's at least self-aware to see that and go forward with that process. What we're looking at doing is moving an hourly person up into a management role. We're working side by side with their counterparts currently. So they're all technicians doing those tasks day to day and moving them into a more, I guess, assistant manager or manager role to where they're going to be over those same people. So looking at what those things are to set them up to win at that and not to, I guess, kind of ruffle feathers with all of those that are around them, because they're going from working side by side with them to being over them and possibly coaching and or doing reviews and those type of things of those counterparts that were the same as them.
Okay. So what's the question?
Any, I guess, tricks, tips, training setups that would be best to help set them up for that, because they're going to continue to work side by side with these people. They're not going to go sit in some fancy office anywhere or something of that nature. They're doing the same job that they're doing day to day, but just having added responsibilities with that.
And what would be your, I mean, I can imagine some things, but I want to hear from you. What would be your concerns? What are the things that concern you or make you worried that you want to anticipate?
Well, one of the concerns is they had just the person I'm looking to move in that position, and another one of the employees was, they both took a day off, the same day off, to go to a concert together. So being able to see where that friendship line is versus the manager line. And be able to draw that at work and then have that outside of work, or whether the friendship part has to go away. And then it's probably some of the favoritism or maturity as well. Their management never really had, I mean, they're young in both facets of life and management. They've never managed type of thing. So just what all that could entail there for them.
Yeah. yeah. Well, I would say, I mean, they need some one-on-one management training for sure. They need to understand the stuff that we talk about on this call, the stuff that we share in the trainings. They need to understand some of these things. But probably the biggest thing, if that's what you're dealing with, is they need to start to realize that the most important thing they can do is have the right conversations, that leadership is about conversations, having the right ones in the right way at the right time with the right people. And problems abound when there's the absence of the right conversation. So you start there very simply for them to understand. Here's a simple example for them to kind of walk them through this. You would say, you now are the manager of a good friend. And what we want you to understand is that there is both a separation and no separation. And so last week, I believe we were talking about this very dynamic, which is to be able to say to someone, we need to form really clear agreements about how we're going to interact. And one of the first agreements is that we both have to be very direct and honest and kind, because without that, we will not be successful professionally or personally. And so my interest is to keep both of those and make them both successful, both the working relationship and the friendship. But there is now a new kind of working relationship that requires something different of you and I. And so just walking him through that as a starting point, there is so much more that person is going to have to learn and understand and figure out. And you're going to have to, someone's going to have to walk through that with them. But I think the first step is to say, you've got to form clear agreements using the right conversations, and you need to help him understand what those proper agreements are. So I've just given you three agreements that they need to form. We need to be direct, we need to be honest, we need to be kind. If these things don't exist, one or both of us is going to feel hurt or betrayed, and it'll hurt the personal relationship. Mm-hmm. So in the business relationship, those three things are required. And then he's got to be able to speak to the shift in the relationship that says, I'm now accountable for things that I wasn't accountable before. And I now serve the organization in a different capacity than I did before. And that's going to mean a shift in how we work and relate. And I expect you and I will have a series of conversations in the coming months where we just continue to get clear about that together. So I would say that's how I would coach that individual. If he were on this call right now, that's what I would tell that individual. I would say, start there to set the frame that allows you to exert your authority in ways that help that person understand. And last thing I would say to that person is, communication and alignment is a series of conversations. It's not a one-time thing. So you should set the expectation. You're going to have a series of conversations over time where we are going to get more and more clarity and alignment. And we are going to misunderstand each other along the way. And that's okay. That's a natural part of the order of this shift. So my commitment to you is that I'll continue to be direct, honest, and open with you. I'll be kind. And I will make sure that you know what's happening every step of the way. I ask the same of you. That's how we're going to preserve our personal friendship as well as our professional one. Obviously, there is an entire body of knowledge deeper than that, but I think this is a really simple place to start. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure.
Other things you want to talk about related to that?
I was just going to comment that the direct, kind, and honest part definitely can apply in this situation. I actually can circle around with a few other current managers that are struggling a little bit of the friendship, and I find it a lot with the young managers when I'm trying to get them to where they need to be. I tell them from the beginning, it's like, you can't be friends with everybody. You got to be at least asking for the respect and those type of things. It's great to be friends with them, but it's usually the quote unquote hourly employee is going to be, find it more difficult to see that line of friendship versus manager or boss. And so it's up to that person that has that professional relationship to help open up that line and see what's going on. So,
okay. So I would just push a little on your frame. And I would say this to anybody who, and it doesn't matter what their age is, it doesn't matter if they're young or if they're old, everybody struggles with this. If you have a personal friendship and you're employed by an organization and you have power over them, it will be delicate. But I want everyone to know you absolutely can be friends and be a manager to someone. This absolutely exists. It only exists when you have formed clear agreements and you honor the agreements. When both sides honor the agreements, then the friendship stays intact. If the agreement gets violated, the friendship will be likely on the rocks. And so anyone who's taking on a management role, you would say to them, if you want this role and you have friendships, I want you to understand the choice you're making. The choice you're making is, while you're in the workplace, your first allegiance and your first loyalty is to the organization that you serve. Your second allegiance is to that friendship. In order for you, but we care about that friendship. We don't want you to lose that friendship. And in order for you to keep that friendship, you have a responsibility to that person. And your responsibility to that person is that you will be honest, open, and kind. And here's what that specifically means. If you are unhappy with how something is going, you commit to yourself that you will let them know you're unhappy with how something is going. That is the first thing that usually feels like a betrayal in work friendship relationships, is when somebody feels like conversations are happening, feelings are had that are not relayed to that person. And so they feel like they're flying blind. And eventually they show up and they're like, when it's too late, they're like, hey, for months, this has been a real issue. And I just have been afraid to talk to you because I didn't know how it would go. And I didn't want to hurt the friendship. And guess what? That's how you hurt the friendship. So it feels like cheating in a sense on the friendship. And so they're like, what the heck, man? We were brothers in this or sisters in this. Why are you bringing this to me? Why did you do this? That's how that kills friendships. And so you just lay that out for them. Make those three agreements. Live those three agreements and you can have both. But understand that your allegiance and loyalty while you're being compensated by this organization is to the organizational goals and objectives. And it is your responsibility to your people to ensure that they align to those objectives and the things that we've hired you for. So just know, if you want to be in management and you have friends, more is required of you than people who don't have those friendships. And it is absolutely possible to make both work, but it's up to you and that person. So that's the way I would say it, instead of you can't be friends.
Okay. No, that's a lot of help. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, JD. Who's up next? Who else has a question? I got an email from, let's see, did anybody else send me an email today? Okay, I have one from Nicole, which I can address. She's not able to talk right now, so I'll wait for her to be available. Who else? Let's see, do I need to pick on somebody? Jason, do I need to pick on you a little bit? I feel like you were going to say something.
Oh, hi, Shane. Sorry I missed last week there. I didn't even look at the recording yet, but I'm sure it was very productive. Just been busy. We had about 15 interviews, hiring some people over the last few weeks, or at least attempting to. One comes to mind here, though. I appreciate JD's deal there. I'm handling a manager as I learn Enneagrams and try and place this individual and how I can help and not trip on my own words or expectations from a number one to, I'm thinking he might even be close to a number two, leading more with everyone else's heart than his own. That was a conversation yesterday, was he is despite any of my attempts to draw focus to the mission, the job, the work, and why holding people accountable is more important than taking care of them blindly. It leads to him being frustrated, and he sees that in his mind, he possibly will be ostracized because he's not their friend anymore. And well, that's not what you need to do. So I'm trying to learn. I keep looking up here at our board. We went through a lot of your modules and we're starting to write down all of the different avenues to what you need, your ideal state and qualities. Yeah, that's where we got so far. So trying to learn that, and I'm kind of inundated with personalities at the moment. Led me to those 15 interviews. How do I not attract? I seem to be more interested or thrilled with interviews of people that are like me. Not necessarily expecting the same answers as if I would say out of my mouth, but I'm trying to attract other personality types, 1 through 9, and not just all, you know, close to ones. And I'm finding that difficult. So two parts, how to encourage other people that are the management along the lines of JD's, but then also how do you attract yourself to other personalities that bring a different dynamic to the organization?
Okay, so I'll address first one first. Appreciate you sharing all that. So specifically as it relates to if you think they're a two or they're demonstrating kind of habits that would be consistent with a two, whether they're a two or not, in this case, doesn't matter as much as that pattern of behavior. And we're going to use the template of the two to kind of work through that. So the first thing about twos is that they forget themselves and they get overconsumed with the needs and views of others. It's also possible this person is a three. Threes are fundamentally searching to be liked. Twos are less about being liked. They're more about being needed. And so identity and sense of worth is what drives the behavior of these two types, the two and the three, which you're showing me elements of both, because there's a ton of what I would call social monitoring. Does that make sense? That yes. The interpersonal antenna is up and they're constantly kind of sensing, what do other people think, feel, need? What do they think of me? How does that show up? And so they lose themselves. And so one of the exhortations to that personality type is an invitation back to themselves. So you say, instead of criticizing what they're doing wrong, which by the way, twos and threes are highly defended, that they're not easily open to feedback. And so ones are super dialed in to what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong. They're not meaning to be mean. They just see it. They're like, well, that's blue and that's red. And I'm merely observing blue is, we want blue, not red. It's that simple. This is not personal. You just need to understand. And what happens to the 2-3 personality is they get super reactive and defended because they're already so worked up about not being good enough. And most of this is hidden. Most of this is not on the surface. And so they're busy kind of fragile there, even though they would never say that. And you should never name it either. It's very exposing and revealing to say, well, you're very fragile and you're very insecure. That's even more the kiss of death, right? Because that's even more exposing to what's going on. So the way to respectfully invite that personality type back to the table is to kind of say to them, I sense that my observation is that you're very focused on the needs and the wants of others, and that is commendable. My bigger concern is that you may have lost touch with your needs, who you really are, and what you really need and want from them. Because who you are and what you need and want from them is essential to the mission of this organization. So I need you to grab hold of the central part of you first. And I'm asking you to put your own oxygen mask on first before you try to help others. And one of the ways you put your oxygen mask on is you get really clear about what you're committed to, what you'll tolerate, and what you won't. And we've got your back, because what you're clear on and committed to is the mission of the organization. And what you're needing and wanting is their respect and falling in line. And we've got your back, but I need you to remember that for you. So can you see how that approach to the conversation is bolstering what is already an insecurity? You're not sort of exposing the insecurity. You're reading it, but you're serving them in a way that they can actually hear and feel validated. Because they're probably, and I don't know them from Adam, right? I know very little about other than what you just told me, but I'll just tell you what I suspect might be going on. There might be quite a bit of terror, quite a bit of fear that like, well, they're not going to like me because of this, but then if I don't do this, now Jason's not going to like me, and that's not good either. I can't win. Nobody likes me. And so that's the terror, and it creates being frozen, and it creates becoming a chameleon, and it creates a lack of integrity, not in the sense of lying, but in the sense of like just being wobbly, right? Integrity in this sense is metaphorical of being strong and clear, still being flexible and malleable, but clear. And so the way you call them back is you call them back to their own sense of commitment and heart. And you go, what are you committed to? I want you back there. I want to feel that strength from you and know that I've got your back when you do that. And what you're signaling to them is, yeah, some other people may not like you, but I want you to know that doesn't bother me because I like you. And you're not actually saying those words, but that's how they might hear it. And when they know, oh, the person in power likes me, that helps me. That calms my anxieties, and I can tolerate a little bit more other people not liking me. Now, I can't guarantee that's going to work, because you've only given me a very, very, it's not your fault. I'm saying we didn't have time to really dig into this person's psychology. But based on my experience of hundreds and hundreds of management experiences, I think this is your best bet to get really good results from that person. And I'd love to see you try it and see what happens. So I'll just pause there and let you feedback or push back if you think I'm out to lunch.
No, not much to push back on. I think it's...
Does that resonate for you?
It does. I can see that. And I absolutely have a... Well, not being too familiar with how blunt my personality might be, I maybe have already done what you say don't do.
I undoubtedly believe you have, and that's okay, because it's just natural, right? So that's why you're on calls like this, is to help you do things that maybe aren't natural to you.
Well, so I'll give it a shot on this way. I don't think I've pushed him out too far, but I can definitely see the consternation in his head with terror and fear of me being upset with him, even though I say the words. It's okay. I understand you're the rock in the hard spot. I understand the level that you're at with the difference in level where I'm at, and you have to speak to them on a daily basis and encourage them and go. But where he's running into, and it's the other question I didn't throw out, but and another problem with my personality is, I'm sure many people on this call, how do you deal with people that are not motivated, that they're okay with where they are? And by that, I mean, not okay in the full sense, okay with their job, but continually to complain. So we have inspections on these large airplanes. And for 20 years, they've been getting run a certain way. And in the true essence of, you know, the government always is cutting back until they hit a bone, and then they'll ease off just a little bit. So we're taking people away, we're taking time away, we're taking money away, and we're constantly improving and becoming more efficient. And it's just always an evolution. And to me, I'm okay with that. Everything I look at is an opportunity to do better, an opportunity to change, an opportunity to be more effective. Others in that organization see it as, I want to show up to work, I want to do something that's programmed, and I want to go home. They don't really have a temperament. What they see is constant change, and there's never an end. So they're almost becoming disenfranchised to the point like, well, why would I constantly change if there's never an end? And to me, it makes sense. That's what we're here to do. If you're not growing, you're dying. And to them, they don't get involved. So I'm pushing for change. That manager's in the middle trying to make me happy. And it's not just me pushing for change. The Air Force is pushing for change. If we don't do this, if we don't do it faster, and I have presented that overall strategic mission to them to say, this is what we're solving. This is why we have to do it. But it's not getting absorbed two layers down, three layers down. So it's kind of tying your whole program into staging the ascent, which we have tried. You know, I've been talking about this for a while, creating the values for the system, getting them to understand the bigger mission, creating the behaviors. Not really doing the rituals yet, but talking about it. We're trying to get that on paper and executed. But as staging the ascent, I have to get my officers and chiefs on board first. I can't just leapfrog them. Yep.
That's correct.
So it's tying your whole module in. And I can see we're moving. It's good. I like it. But I have these sections that are, I'll use a blunt term, a rough term, they're so far removed and disengaged that I'm going to burn out a manager or myself trying to get them to change fast enough or fire them all. But yeah, we'll see.
Okay. So a couple of things. How many people total are you talking about needing to change and realign to another way of being, or how many people total are we talking?
This manager oversees two different sections, that inspection and repair and reclamation. So R&R. They have full-time 5, 8, 8 and 5, whatever, 5, 13.
Oh, okay. So you're just saying, you're not talking about the entire system is blocked. You're talking about one part of one section of the organization is blocked. That's awesome. So the way that works is the same exact thing. You've got to make sure that the level below, how many levels are there between you and this person who's the block?
Well, that's tricky because that's one of my hiring. So if everybody was in place, 1, 2, 3 to the manager and 4 to the workers.
Okay, so three to the manager. So that means there's one, two, and then the manager. Is that right?
Well, correct. Correct.
Okay.
An officer and, chief and, are, and then the manager.
And are the officer chief, are they fully enrolled in what it is you're
saying? The officer saying? Is. The officer is probably 3 weeks ago. I talked about the chief, and he's one that says, I like where we're going. I see where we're going, but you're going to have to wait for me to retire, which is July. So there's my roadblock.
Okay. So I think just be patient with yourself. Remember this. I did this with an organization of 200 people, right? And I've done this in lots of different sizes. I'm just giving you one example. 200 people, 200 organization, maybe four levels deep, all the way down to the front line. And they were diverse geographic all over the country. And it took us, we did a values evolution. We took the existing values, we changed them. We created new values. We put rituals, tools, and processes. It took us 1 year to get everybody enrolled with four levels and 200 people. It took us 1 year. Normally that would take 5 years to truly get people to buy into values. So I think one of the conversations we get to have is to calibrate your expectations for how long things take. And that's in a corporate environment. You're in actually a bureaucratic environment. People work for the government because they don't want to have to do certain things. You attract a certain personality, even though it's military, you're still attracting a certain personality. So I would say that 1 year gets longer. It's harder to do in bureaucratic institutions where firing is really, really hard. That is why people take longer, because they're like, I don't have to change because there's nothing you can do to me. And I'm really happy where I am. And so this is where I'm just inviting you, in the same way that if I were working with a pastor, completely different timelines. How churches change, radically different, takes much, much longer, and a totally different process. So what I'm telling you is I want you to kind of set your expectations in a new place. I want you to identify the roadblocks, and then you work the same process with each roadblock. So that guy who said, I like it, I'm in, but you're going to have to wait till I retire. Guess what? You go, I'm going to keep having a series of conversations with you. I'm going to keep meeting with you and inviting you into this way of doing something, because the person below you, I really need. And I respect that you want to wait to retire, and you have that choice. But I'm inviting you into this with me as a kindness, as a courtesy, to support the mission that I'm trying to achieve. And I know that unless you're enrolled, the person below you isn't going to get there. So you hold the keys to the kingdom. You've got the power to decide whether this is going to go or not going to go. And I'd love your help. If you want me to wait till July, I'll wait till July. I'd rather not. Get them back in. Don't write them off. They might even be saying, I kind of want to be relevant still till July. You know, like, I don't want to just sit here and punch a clock. Check in. What does their heart really want? They want to have, maybe they want to have a legacy. So that's the thing I would suggest is to really re-enroll that person. Once you have them enrolled, then you go back down to that manager and you say, okay, series of conversations to get that manager up to speed, get them enrolled, find out what they want, find out what they need, figure out where they are. And then if you got to fire them, you got to fire them. You know, at a certain point, you'll have tried enough of the things you need to try and you can terminate if that's possible. Does that help?
It does. It reinforces it. I mean, I'm there. These conversations still go. I have played a lot of videos, and I mean, we constantly go. You're absolutely right. I don't see enough fruit to keep me satisfied on a week-to-week basis. There are some. There are a lot of the other organizations are filling that void for me, that's saying we're on the right path. It's just this, and it's nice that we can isolate it to this one section now, because before it was
amazing,
the whole
group. Actually. Just a reminder, you are less than 3 months into this process that I'm talking about. And I just told you it takes a year in a corporate environment. So I want you to see how much progress you've made in what an incredibly short period of time. And I've worked in government also. I've worked with the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, which is even more bureaucratic and less motivated. I mean, the military's incredibly motivated compared to that, right? So, and we've seen change, right? But you're working at an accelerated pace for what my expectations would be for your organization. So please remember that when you start having these conversations, is go, I'm actually ahead of schedule by a long shot.
I appreciate that, and I try to, but there's always just more. I guess that's part of that other question, right? My expectation for more is not everybody's.
It's undoubtedly not everybody's, and that's welcome.
Struggle to understand that.
No, that's normal. That's built into leadership for every single person on this call. The problem of leadership, the challenge of leadership is I've got a vision. I've got an idea. I know exactly what it could look like if you all would just do the thing I need you to do. That is at the heart of all leadership. And the way you get people to do the thing you need to do is you have a series of conversations. That's all it is. You have the right conversation in the right way at the right time with the right people. And you have enough times and you begin to see the change happen. But leaders have to calibrate expectations. Too many leaders today assume, I've got the power. I say we go left. Why aren't you all doing cartwheels to go left? That just defies gravity. Built into emotional systems is this thing called gravity or inertia. It doesn't work that way. So respect the laws of physics. The way you do as a pilot, you respect the laws of gravity and you know exactly what you have to do and what you can do, what you can't do. And if you want to land a plane, two ways to get it on the ground. You can crash it or land it. One is a lot faster. One is a lot slower. So you're trying to land a plane. You're creating a landing sequence that takes time. You have to plan your approach. You have to set all the things up. And if someone's like, get the plane on the ground, man, I want to be on the ground now. You're like, cool. I could do that for you. You won't like the outcome, but I could do it.
You're a wise guy in a good sense.
Good. You're doing great.
I appreciate it, Shane. Thanks for the help.
You bet. Okay. Who's next? Nicole, are you available yet?
Yes. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. So my question this week was really just about as leaders, what we're trying to do is get a better view of what our strengths and weaknesses are, and more importantly, if we are the stumbling blocks or causing problems in our organization. My question really is about how do we take the feedback that we get from our employees, especially if it's contradictory, in order to make a proper assessment.
Okay. So there are two ways. And one way is the way that, you and I are in discussions about a private engagement. And what I've designed in that proposal is the fastest, most reliable way to get exactly what you just asked for. That is the best way. The best way is someone from the outside interviewing stakeholders, triangulating narratives, digging below the surface of those narratives, looking for consistent repeating patterns of behavior, and identifying and distilling those things. That's the absolute best way. You can do it within a couple of weeks, and you have the clear picture of reality, a picture of reality that is the closest approximation. And what it does is, to use the pilot metaphor, which, forgive me, Jason, I am not a pilot, but I like to pretend that this is what pilots do. That while they're flying a plane, they might have warning signs and alerts that go off in their dashboard. And pilots have to make choices about, do I ignore that one because of these things that are going on? Or do I address every single thing that might be needing to be addressed? Like, you can have warning lights that go off that you can say, that one I don't have to worry about right now. Or driving a car, right? Oil is low is different than your engine's about to fail. Those are two different, like, that one I need to address, this one I can ignore, I'll deal with it in a week or two, right? So the same thing happens with leadership. Your people are your dashboard, and they will come to you with alarms, alerts. And often those alerts will contradict their, by virtue of their personality, by virtue of their vantage point, by virtue of their agenda. It's hard to know what they're actually telling you is real, or it's just their own thing. So everything you just said is really normal. So that's the fastest way, is to get somebody in there to do that. And it's the most reliable. There is another way, if you don't have the funding to make that kind of investment. The other way to do it, and I would recommend this for everybody no matter what, right? But it just takes a long time. It's consistent behavior over time. Not that different from investing in like a 401k. And so there are habits of behavior that you as a leader get to demonstrate consistently over enough time to create a feedback-rich environment that allows you to develop more trust in what people are giving you and allows them to feel safer to give you direct, honest feedback. And it's hard for me to know how far along any of you are in your organization in terms of building a feedback-rich culture and an environment of trust. You all might have incredible trust from your people, and they might feel like totally safe telling you everything they think and feel, or they may not feel very safe telling you what they think and feel. And that creates a less feedback-rich environment. So, you know, an example of one way to do that is to have a weekly checkpoint that is not related to business items, but is related to the relationship you have with that person. It takes 30 minutes. Maybe it's once a week. Maybe it's once every 3 weeks. Doesn't have to be all the time. It is at the end of, which module is that? It's called the zipper conversation. And I'll explain it briefly and then I'll find where it is in the modules. But the zipper conversation is one little tool I use to try to create the beginnings of a feedback-rich environment. And it looks something like this. Hey, I'm at my best when I know what's going on for you. And so let me share with you what I think is happening in the organization. I want to hear what you think is happening in the organization. Then let me tell you what I see about your role within the organization and what's going on and what I'm excited about, what I want to see more of. Then I want to hear from you. What do you see about your role in the organization? And then at the end, I want to know, what could I do to be a better manager for you? What do you need from me for me to be a better manager from you? And that's it. And then my only request is that each time we have this conversation, which we're going to schedule every whatever cadence you like, is that you'll come to me with your truth as you see it. And I will listen and try to understand it. I also want you to know that I'm having this conversation with others, and they may be giving me different feedback and information, and I will have to figure out how to navigate the feedback I'm getting. So there are some times where you may not feel I'm addressing your feedback, and it may be because I'm hearing a completely different thing from a larger number of people that I need to address. So it's not that I'm not listening to you, it's that I'm trying to navigate all of the feedback I'm getting. So I don't know how long that just took me to say, 5 minutes maybe. It's not a long thing. And I don't know how much they're going to share, but it doesn't take more than about 30 minutes. But if you do that consistently over time, what starts to happen is they start to anticipate, oh, in a week, I'm going to be asked what they could do as a manager to make life better for me. And they start to think about those things. Actually, you know what, Nicole, it would help me if you could just tell me specifically the things you need in what order. Like, I need priority. Or, you know what, it would help me if we could just have more touch points. Or it would help me if I knew you really trusted me to do my work or whatever, right? And then you could also say, here's what I need from you. You know, so after you've been heard enough, the other person's been heard enough, then you can start asking what they need from you. So I'll pause there. Is that getting at an answer to your question?
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you.
And the actual zipper conversation, and I call it a zipper because it's sort of like aligning these tongues together so that you have a nice connection. So that's why it's called the zipper conversation. Let me see if I can find it very quickly. unless somebody has watched it already or and knows, that'd be amazing if any of you actually knew where that was. I just need to sign into the thing. I'll find it pretty quick. Do you want to say more, Nicole, based on what I just said? Ask anything deeper?
No, actually, that was very comprehensive and it's really helpful. I, for what you and I are discussing, I don't have a lot of time, so I think I'll probably go with that. You know, what the accelerated version. But for the rest of us, and even for other entities that I have, which won't be involved in it, I think it'll be really nice to take that time and have those touch points. If we see the feedback coming to us as being highly colored by a person's insecurities, inadequacies, maybe a little CYA, how do you handle that? Do we not address that directly? What's the best way if you really doubt the feedback that you're getting from someone?
Yeah, so I mean, could you give me a little bit more color on that? I mean, there are lots of ways to handle that. I'm just trying to figure out, could you give me a little bit more detail?
I think we've talked about it in the last few weeks, something that we all as leaders in our organization see, people coming back when they don't perform or when they are not operating at the level they should. They're blaming it on coworkers. They're blaming it on our leadership style, that they didn't know about something. Occasionally it's I forgot, but I forgot is usually combined with because I'm so overwhelmed or I'm so inundated with things that I have to take care of that no one else is. And I think for me, a lot of that is very disingenuous, but they might actually be feeling it. Honestly, I just, sometimes it feels like a dodge. I don't know if anyone else who manages people feel or experience these same things.
Yes, I'll answer for everybody. Yes, we all experience that. Sorry, I didn't mean to speak for all of you, but Yes. And JD, thank you. And Sarah, yes. So just so everybody knows, it's module 4 of video 13. I also just found it, Michelle, always. So Nicole, you're in very good company. so without having a very specific reference, I can give you kind of principles, but I'm not sure how useful they are. You're absolutely right that people will come to you with hidden agendas, insecurities, all of these different things. And you're right not to call them out directly because you'll just create a huge amount of defendedness. And once somebody's in a defended state, they can no longer hear you and things just start to, that's where you set up a domino, you knock it down and it's all the wrong dominoes start to fall. So it's wise not to point out character flaws or intent or any of that. So what you want to focus on is behavior. When you have the conversation, you're focusing on behavior and words. And then if you keep getting the same kind of complaint, the thing you want to be on the lookout for is we all, to some degree, run rackets. And a racket is a stated, you know, a racket is in Prohibition era. It's a certain kind of business front, but it's actually doing distilling alcohol in secret. And so you put on a front and then you do this other thing. And so organizational rackets are really common, which is like, you're not communicating enough with us. That's the complaint. That's the stated complaint. And it's really a racket that they run in order to let them validate or feel something that they like to feel, and it serves them in some way. And because they're never actually bringing the thing that's real, you end up just trying to address the thing that will never be addressed. It's just a racket, like you're running a racket now. And so it's very likely that one of your employees is running a racket. It happens all the time. People do it all the time. We do it to our spouses. It happens all the time, right? It's not some horrible, awful thing. It's a built-in part of organizational life. If you observe a racket, one of the ways you can start to get behind it is to ask the simple question, after you've heard them enough times, what do you need? What do you need in order for this to be resolved? Ask them that question. I hear lots of this, this, and this. I need you to name in simple terms a need that if it were resolved, if you got what you needed, that it would be resolved. And see what they do with that. That's usually an indicator. So if they're like, oh, all I need is to be copied on that one email twice a week and I'm good. Great, we'll copy on that email twice a week and you're good, whatever, right? Whatever the thing is. But if they're like, well, what I need is I need this person to kind of be this and I need you to be more of that and I need these people to be da, 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 da. Then you go, okay, great. What do you suspect others need from you that you're not currently giving? So that's kind of like, okay, you've named 30 different things that you need. We're not going to be able to give all of those things to you. But I'll work on that. I'll think about it. I'll reflect on it. As part of my reflection, what do you sense others might need from you to solve this? And now you're turning it to a reflection question. And you can do that because you've already asked, what do you need from everybody else? So you've now given permission to ask the question back to them. And see what they say then. So again, it's hard for me to navigate a conversation that's kind of in the abstract, but I'm giving you the best I can with limited information. Does that help? And am I on the wrong track?
No, it's very helpful. I have dozens of them. So then they all fall under what you just said. So that'll be very helpful.
Thank you. So just so you know, if you choose to move forward with the work we're doing, I will resolve all of that in a matter of weeks. I will know everything that's really going on and everything that's not. I'll be able to detect all the rackets, and I'll even be able to have pre-conversations for you to resolve them for you. I'll also be able to prepare people to have the right conversation with you so that it's way more efficient. So that's when I can do really, really high impact work. So just be aware that, and that goes for any of you, if you feel like you're at a place where it's not the same as a $5,000 group program. It's a different kind of investment. And it's custom to each organization and individual, but it gets you an enormous return in a very short period of time. And it cleans up a lot of management issues. So, and I know not everybody on this call is at that place, and I'm not trying to sell that to everybody. I just want you to be aware that that is the alternative to the stuff that I'm trying to tell you now, which is, I believe necessary for everybody to get good at doing, even after I do a private intervention, these are habits you want to have in place. And you can put them in place without a private intervention and get results. It'll just take a little bit longer and it's a little harder to navigate.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Looking forward to helping out. Excited. Okay, who else is up? Was that enough, Nicole? I didn't mean to jump off. You have anything else you wanted to?
No, that was everything. Thanks.
Okay, great. All right. Who else? Who should I pick on? Steven, I'm picking on you, bud. Are you there?
I am.
Okay. Just wanted to follow up. Last week, we did quite a bit of work around your relationships. How you're thinking about managing outcomes versus accountabilities, all that fun stuff. Just checking in to see what registered, what were your takeaways, what, if anything, came of that. It's okay if nothing came of it. Just want to check in.
Well, I did have the conversation with him and kind of put out there of just the respect and, you know, exactly what we talked about how at the end of the day, we have to both kind of be willing to be honest with each other and respectful and things like that. And it went pretty good. And then 2 days later, I ended up playing golf with him and it's going better. I mean, since I've kind of had some of these conversations over the last couple of weeks from either the modules or last week, he's kind of turned a corner. And I think one of the big things I have with him is that, and I probably just like Nicole or some of these people, our employees, I don't think they always understand that we have years of experience underneath our belt. And, you know, I watched your module 8 and 9 today on employees of the trigger points. And kind of like, I can identify with a couple of those. And I think you get frustrated because you're not trying to put these people in bad, you want them to win. And a lot of times how you go about that is the issue as much more than what you're saying or the intent, I guess, how they're perceiving it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, say a little bit more. I mean, I think I have an idea. I don't want to assume that I understand. I want to hear you. So say a little more.
When you want, like, I really do care about my employees. Like, you know, I want them to be developed. I want them to win every day. But how I go about that every day isn't always probably the most productive. And the intent is there, but is that coming through to them in communicating that? And I talk to them all the time about, in regards to talking to our customers, if the customer doesn't understand, is it the customer's fault or your fault? It's your responsibility to communicate effectively to the customer. And I think that then in turn goes to me of communicating effectively to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. This is at the heart of the program. Language is your only tool. Conversations is the only act, behavior that leaders actually have to create and affect change, bring alignment, boost motivation, and buy-in, right? So 100%, how you show up, the words you use, how you have conversations, in what way, with whom, will shape the outcomes that you're after. And so something as simple as you just reminding them at the beginning of a conversation. So as a reminder to everybody, often the first 15 seconds of any conversation will determine its outcome. How you start, the first 15 seconds will determine that outcome. Imagine these two different conversations. First 15 seconds, I'm going to start each one. Imagine the outcome. Hey, I'm not happy with how you're performing. That's conversation one. That was less than 15 seconds. How do you think energetically that conversation is going to unfold? Well, what do you think energetically?
All they heard was, you're not happy.
Yeah. And what do you think happens emotionally to them? Are they open and receptive, eager to hear? No. Walls go up, right? Mm-hmm. Now, good luck scaling that Everest, right? That was your words that kicked off the first. Now, I know that's kind of an extreme version. Very few managers start with, I'm not happy with your performance, but just in case, right? That's an extreme. The other way, another way, and there are millions of ways, right? So there's not just one way, but a way that I prefer is, you start with your positive intent of the conversation. Hey, my interest in we need to have a conversation. My primary aim is for you to win. That's my goal. No matter what happens in this conversation, remember my goal is for you to win. Are you up for that conversation? And then I ask permission. Less than 15 seconds. How do you think that conversation is going to go?
Well, you started with a negative and a positive, and that positive is going to catapult you to the next part of the conversation where they feel like you care about them, for one.
Yep. And you stated very clearly in a positive intent, what that meant was energy follows attention. So that's like the direction you threw the ball for the dog to chase, right? Mm-hmm. If you throw it towards a ravine, the dog's going to go off into the ravine. Mm-hmm. And if you throw it into a meadow, the dog is going to go chase after a beautiful meadow. So you're setting an intent by throwing the energy in that direction. And then you did a second thing, you asked permission. When you didn't have to, you're the manager, you're going to have the conversation, whether they like it or not. But when you ask permission, you give them empowerment and you hear the word yes. They say the word yes. They hear themselves say the word yes. Yes is open. Yes is, I consented to what's about to unfold. I am now part of that unfolding with you. So it's, in a way, it's, you know, salespeople use this technique. Mm-hmm. Would it be okay if I showed you something? Yes. That's the first yes. People prefer mm-hmm. saying yes. They don't like to say no, right? And so you lead, and the same thing in management. You're doing a kind of, you're about to coach someone, and coaching requires someone's permission for it to be really effective. Now, in the corporate world, most leaders don't know that. They just assume, well, I can just shoot my mouth off and say what I want because I've got the power and authority, and your job is to listen, and I pay you to listen, so deal with it. And if you're not happy with it, then I can fire you. That's what's beautiful about this relationship. You know, you're not like that. I know you're not like that, but that is common, right? So I'll pause. Is this helpful?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's when you said you hear yes, exactly what you followed up with was exactly my sales training, all the things that I've gone through. You get your first yes, and they can get your second yes. And it's what I teach them when they're talking to customers of how can you get a yes? How can you get the second yes? And then it flows from there. It's a sales flow that if you can get someone going down that road, your sales increase exponentially. And I'm sure the buy-in from the employee increases exponentially. And so that's exactly, it's why I jumped from module one, I was almost done with it, to module two, from having these conversations to kind of be more, because it's my major situation in my office is keeping my employees engaged and getting them where they need to be and changing the culture.
And Zipper conversations could be helpful for you too. Okay. Module 4, video 13, it's a standalone video. You don't have to watch all of module 4 to get it. It's just here's a way to help create some alignment and build rapport and keep relationships going. And just so everybody's really clear, sometimes when I say, oh, it's sort of like selling, people often hear that as manipulation. And to be clear, it's born of kindness and respect and empathy. Mm-hmm. So when I say to somebody, are you, I mean, I had an employee recently and they were not performing and things were going quite badly and they were in a bad place emotionally. And I was talking about an observation I had about them and I noticed they became super defensive. And I was like, and I just simply said, I'm really eager for you to be performing at your best. Are you in a place where you're open to that kind of conversation? And they were like, no. And I went, great. I am so appreciative of your honesty and your self-awareness. Let's revisit this another day when you're feeling better about it. I'm gonna follow up in 2 days. And know that my interest is for you to be at your best and to really enjoying this work when you're ready for that. And it took him 3 days. And after 3 days, he came back and was like, I'm so sorry. I was in such a bad headspace. I was going to be a disaster in that conversation. And I was like, hey, I get it. I have those moments too. We're not all at our best all the time, but let's have the conversation now. You're open to some input, you're open to some feedback. Is that right? Because he knew what it meant. He knew I was going to give corrective input and it went beautifully. But it would have gone disastrous if I hadn't stopped in the moment and said, hold on, are you in a place where you can hear this?
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. When I'm going down that road of negativity, I try to figure out what I'm putting in my brain of, am I, you know, I like sports talk or I've played sports my whole life, you know, at every level. And so just one of those situations where, you know, I find that if I listen to too much sports talks, I start being negative because of how critical people are in those situations. And so am I feeding my brain the right words to then kind of to put me in a better situation in my day-to-day life? So totally awesome. Understand that.
And I think you have this wonderful heart, and you demonstrate this deep curiosity and a desire to kind of serve people and do that really well. And I think occasionally, my sense of you is that your own sort of habits of performance get in the way of your really kind heart, you know, where you kind of your expectations of either yourself. There's some voice that's in your head that is go harder, faster, better, tighter, leaner, cleaner. And yet your heart is way more limber than that. So before you lead from here, the more your people are going to be awakened and inspired.
No, my actual therapist is actually trying to work with me on those kind of things of it's okay to not push yourself every bike ride and my wife has a master's in counseling, runs a therapy business in town, and she always talks to me like, you don't always have to be competing at everything. Like, it's that mentality that I grew up with. My dad, you know, he was in the army. He was a college football player. He just mentally prepared me to be tough.
Yeah.
And sometimes I can't turn it off. And you're right. I do. I expect people to operate the way I do. And my wife always tells me there's only one Steve Gillespie. So calm down, like slow
down. Yeah. So an exercise, a fun little exercise for you, Steve, that I would encourage, and there may be others of you on this call that can relate to what I kind of recommend it to all type A driven, high achieving people, which is pretty much everybody on this call. This is kind of who I work with. There's a really beautiful practice that I want you guys to all consider, which is it includes four steps. Step one is follow the thing that excites you the most in that moment. Remove all shoulds, remove all responsibility, and connect only to what you most want in that moment. And here's what I mean by that. It could be the middle of the workday. What I most want is a nap. What I most want is to watch a movie. What I most want is to go on a run. What I most want is to go eat a cheeseburger. Okay? When you connect to the thing you most want, feel like doing, even though it does not comport with all of your list of responsibilities, follow it. Go do it. As long as it depends on you and it doesn't hurt others or yourself, for that matter, as long as those are the conditions. Follow it until that desire leaves. So here's what that could look like. I want to go on a run. I start running. In a half a mile, I'm totally bored. I don't want to do this anymore. Stop. Whatever you're doing, stop. Partway through the movie, I'm not interested anymore. Stop. Partway through the cheeseburger, I don't want to have the rest of it. Stop. Whatever you do, follow it until it completes. And it's a very important exercise to simply pay attention to desire. Not responsibility, not achievement, not should, just where does your desire actually go? Follow that desire until it completes. And then repeat the process. And take 1 hour out of your day at least, and just follow your highest excitement. Follow it until it reaches its completion, whatever that is. And then repeat that again. And it might be like, I'm going on a run. I'm going to go on a 5 mile run. And you start running, you make it a half mile in and you're done. Like, now I want to take a nap. Then you go, you take a nap and you sleep for as long as you want to sleep. And then you go get a cheeseburger, whatever it is that is just doesn't feel like it fits in the responsibility set of shoulds and do and have. What you start to awaken when you do this is the most powerful form of guidance on the planet. Human desire is the most powerful and wisest expression of guidance in our lives. And when you start to live according to that, you begin to align with synchronicities that you could have never planned or imagined. And all kinds of things start opening up in your life, and your life becomes flow rather than effort. This is what's possible. It takes tremendous courage to do. Most people can't do it. But when you start to do it, life starts to get so much more fun. And you start to live in a deeper alignment with your own being. And your life becomes really fulfilling. So that's my assignment, is try to take 1 hour this week to do exactly what I said. And just see what happens. Just notice. Have no expectation of the outcomes. None. That's probably step 4. No expectation of the outcomes. does what I just said sound kind of weird and crazy, or does it sound like, huh, that's something I want to try?
No, it makes total sense to me, because I think if you're type A, you have a real desire to complete something. Once you start it, you want to complete it. And that happened to me a couple weeks ago. I was on a ride. National championship game was on. I wanted to watch it. And I didn't want to ride the whole time. Like, I was like, it was cold. I didn't want to ride. You got to ride. You have a race coming up. And I grinded out 10 miles. And my wife's like, that sounds horrible. When I got home, like, I didn't want to ride. She's like, that sounds horrible. And it's that I started it. I got to get to the end.
So there is, in one of the modules, the story of the lion and the rabbit. Have you come across that story yet in one of the modules?
I don't think so.
Okay. So this speaks directly to what I'm talking about right now. And I'm going to find it here. I believe it's module 5. Let me just see if I can find it briefly, because for everybody who's considering doing this, watch this little video and it'll help you connect to the fact that you have multiple kinds of guidance. You have mental guidance, guidance that is internalized, habituated, patterned, programmed by advertisers, parents, spouses, children, everybody on the outside. And then you have guidance that is coming from within. And that is, in my worldview, divine guidance. The highest expression of guidance comes in the form of desire. And that is an incredibly powerful guidance, but it is also very, very easy to ignore, because it is a small, still voice rather than a powerful, loud, manipulating voice, which is what the mind is. So one of them is module 5, video 3, which is called Finding Your Guidance, of How to Evoke the Wisdom of the Heart. And that's more about like making big decisions and all that, but that's one thing that will help you. And then the other one, I believe, is in module 3. Let me just make sure. It's either module 2 or module 3. But again, as you guys are thinking about taking this challenge on, all right, I don't think it's 3, so I'm going to go to 2. There's got to be a way. I wonder if there's a way to search this site. I'm not seeing it. wouldn't be module 1. I know I did it somewhere. All right. I don't want to take too much time on this call looking for this, but at minimum, I think it was the one I just said, which I now can't remember what I just said, module 5, video 3, I think. At minimum, try to watch that. And then who else? All right, we can go on from that. Is that good, Steve, for now?
Yeah, that's good. It's a kind of like, you know, I've just been really kind of trying to take in 2 to 3 videos a day and just really kind of work through it. And I'm also trying to be careful of how I coach my people until kind of I have more information and a better game plan of doing it, of not avoiding it, but trying to be good about how I'm going about it instead of maybe having a bad conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I think it's great. I think it's good for you to keep doing that, but I think it's also good to remember that all of this is really art and we're all going to make mistakes. And so having a do-over is really good. Hang on just one second. So, you know, at the end of the day, you and I both, even though I train in this stuff, in the moment, I'm going to try something. And the greatest thing about leadership and conversation is it's not like you're etching it on a tombstone and you get one shot at it. And if you screw it up, it's all done. It's so dynamic. And so remember, communication is a series of conversations, and you're going to make mistakes. And part of the power of a good conversation is the ability to recognize it, own it, repair it, and then keep rebuilding. And that creates trust, right? So the goal is not for you to have perfect coaching conversations. The goal is for you to have a series of conversations where you can dynamically build more and more trust. And one of the ways you build trust is by demonstrating, hey, that conversation didn't go the way I wanted, and I don't think I was in my best state, and I want to apologize for that. Is it okay if we try again? Gosh, that little phrase right there builds all kinds of trust again. People are like, wow, that guy can really see that he was out of line. And that means that if he does that, maybe the next time he's out of line, I can anticipate and trust that he'll be able to see that and come back to me. And the more you do that, the more I trust you even more. And the more those missteps don't really cost you anything, because I know who you are. I trust you. I know you have a good heart. I know you have an ability to repair, and I can repair. So we're golden. We can make as many mistakes as we want now because we're so good at repair. So that's why I don't want you to feel kind of too shy about getting out and trying it. I do want you to kind of be able to say, okay, I know I want to try this.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, who's up next? We've got more time if you guys want it. If you're feeling... if you're feeling it.
Shane, I had some follow-up question based on what you were just sharing. Is this a good time?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, you know, it was a bit mind-blowing listening to you talk about go for what's in your heart as desire, because as was mentioned earlier, I think a lot of us, we associate our success with the fact that we're willing just to push through and do the grind and do the things that nobody else is willing to do. And we will, my personal experience is I will do that and grind myself right into the ground and be so far away from flow. So when we're in those positions, is that I'll do the exercise of trying 1 hour this next week, but it really excited me, the idea of knowing that when life and business start to flow, things just come together so quickly and easily. What's a good way to have us check ourselves when we start to get into that grind and really differentiate between what is the grind that's required to take us over the finish line and what is it just habitual that we need to pull back and take care of ourselves?
It's all connected to desire. So asking yourself, do I want this? Does this excite me? Because here's the reality. Every one of you on this call, every one of us, at one time or another, it is exciting to grind it out. You're loving the kind of digging in and driving hard and pushing, and you're just alive when you do it. So it's not saying don't ever work hard. It's saying connect first to the thing that awakens you, that makes you excited. Sometimes lifting weights is amazing, and I want to lift weights. Sometimes it's just a waste of time, and they're too heavy, and I want light weights. And I don't want weights at all. They're too heavy. Why do I want to lift weights, right? So it's really connecting to that. I mean, that's a great example. Let's say you go to the gym, and you're lifting weights, and that day you're just like, I don't want to lift this weight. The most courageous, brave, brilliant thing you could do is put the weights away and walk away and go eat a hamburger and watch a movie and allow that to unfold and give yourself kindness for a period of time and then come back to it when that energy awakens you again. This is a very courageous, difficult way to live because it goes against everything you're going to hear on Instagram and everything every mentor out there will tell you. Everybody's always telling you to set goals and work hard to achieve them and drive yourself. And even when you don't feel like it, you're going to do better if you just try. I just believe that that is a less courageous way to live. And I believe it is less in alignment with your highest purpose. And the more courageous, more wise way to live is to get rid of all of that and to connect deeply with our desire, which, by the way, we have all been trained to ignore. nobody wants you to connect with your real desires. Everybody else wants you to connect with their desire for you. You know, so I want you to want this. And so go after that thing that I want you to want. It's just really hard in this world to actually tune into. What do I feel? What do I want? What would it be like for me to pursue this thing that I love? So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I hope I'm answering it. Am I close to what you were asking?
Yep. Absolutely. Thanks.
You want more around that?
That answered my question. It definitely gives me some guidance. And I'm hoping everybody else on this call is tuning into it, because I'm guessing we're all in that same place where we're grinding ourselves out a little bit too often.
Yes, I would say all of you are in that place. I don't work with clients who aren't like that. I don't know why that is. It's just how we all are. We're just, those of us who are leaders got there because there's high achieving kind of bones in us. Good. Other questions?
I do have a question. Is there any type of, like for your team, besides putting them in a situation like this, of books or anything that would like lead to some of these things that they could be reading or you could read as a team?
What do you mean? Just so I understand what you're asking. Like related to what I'm talking about right now?
Well, that or also building a stronger team of they're kind of getting a buy-in of building, of working on themselves as well, you know, because I think it was Jason talked about it earlier of, you know, there's people out there that like, they're happy where they're at and they don't know that they want to grow more, but how do you get them to maybe do that or do that for the team concept?
So I wrote a book called Cats Don't Bark, A Guide to Knowing Who You Are. What's that?
I was about to chime with that response before you said cats don't bark, especially with the desire part. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, actually, maybe you're better to talk about it if that's what came to you. But why don't you share what you were going to share?
Well, you know, I've been reading through the chapters. I'm almost finished with it, actually. And then, you know, we had this discussion about just doing in the middle of the day, as you said, just walk away and do something. And you kind of triggered something when you said about lifting weights. I go to the gym religiously, and it's one of those things I've never done that. But when you said it, you're like, well, there are days. Lots of days that I go, you know what, I'll just drop this weight and walk out of here, you know, but I usually just walk away and come back and I said, I got to push through this. And then for some reason, something in my head made me read my notes on Cats Don't Bark, which is Shane's book. I'm not related to Shane. It's not a shameless plug. It's a great book. One page there has this saying, that's our desire or values may lead us to uncover skills we never knew we had, right? So sometimes I have this mindset that I just got to push through this and just to grind it out. And then not thinking after I reviewed that note, well, yeah, maybe you give in to your desire every now and then, because that kind of, as you said, frees your mind or just get that thing out of the way that you're wanting to do. And then, you know, you satisfy the desire and then maybe the grind is not that bad anymore. That's just what I got out of it. So sorry to jump in there, but yeah, it's a great book. If y'all haven't read it, it's fantastic.
Well, Reese, it's kind of you to say, and it was the thought that I had, Steve, was that book is designed to help people do the very thing I just described. It's hard one for me. I'm like all of you. I am highly driven and very, very kind of like override the heart. I'm also a 3 on the Enneagram, which is like you get detached from your heart pretty quick and you just kind of go. So, you know, like a lot of things in life, people become experts by failing a lot. And then, so that's how I developed the expertise that I had. But let me tell you guys a really brief story of exactly how I did this very recently. I think it was back in last year sometime. There was a month where I had just been pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And I noticed that I wasn't getting any results. And I was tired and I was burned out. And I was like, if this is success, like I was being successful in a number of things, but I just wasn't happy. I was like, if this is success, I don't want it. And I just realized, I'm like, you know what? I'm not living the thing that I claim to live. I better do that. So I quite literally just took a month off. I didn't go travel. I just like would wake up in the morning and be like, today I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to let my business languish and I'm not even going to work on it. And I'm just going to do whatever I feel like doing every day. I'm not going to achieve anything this entire month. And so I took that month completely off. And somehow I tripled my income in that 1 month alone through no effort of my own, just through synchronicity, just through things falling in my life. It was just a hilarious. And I can't tell you, I've done this dozens of times. This is not just a one time, it's a recent time. And again, the goal isn't always like, oh, triple your income. And that's not what I'm promising. I'm just saying that what happened was the more in tune and the more happy I got, the more life began to flow. And the things that I was working so hard to white knuckle my way through, I started experiencing and receiving. And that is very real and very possible. And so it's just super hard to get out of that habituated, programmed way of being in the world. And I encourage you all to do something grossly irresponsible from time to time, like the thing I just did, and watch as everything starts to come together on your behalf. Without you, you couldn't even imagined it. And that was the beautiful thing. I just noticed since there are certain times that I'm like, oh, I'm pushing way too hard. I need to stop pushing so hard. And again, the goal was like, if at any time I felt motivated to work, I would work. It's not that I didn't work for a month. It's that I only worked when I really felt excited to work. And the moment I stopped feeling excited, I was going to go watch Game of Thrones, or I was going to go lay down and eat popcorn, or whatever the thing I felt like doing was. And it's such a beautiful experience to connect to your inner guidance. It's joyful. It's not suffering. Comments, questions? See that, Michelle, resonating with you? Good.
Everything today is resonating, even what you just said. Unfortunately, I can't take a month off, so I'll have to figure out other things.
Well, and to be clear, when I say I'm going to take a month off, I didn't take a month off. I worked every single day that month, but I only worked when I felt like working. Now, again, that is a partly the luxury of being your own boss. So you may have limits where you can't do the thing I just described in the way that I just described it, but there are other things you can do that you can carve out sections of your life where you can give yourself maximum freedom.
I mean, pretty much for myself, I'm just, like mentioned earlier, we grind. Like, we have to push through, we have to get to whatever we have to. And the one thing I consistently fails, a huge a harsh word, but that's pretty much, is taking time for me.
I think that's true of most people on this call. You're all high achievers working really hard, and it's really hard to actually do something for you. It sounds funny, but what I'm saying is incredibly difficult. It's much harder than me just telling you guys, yep, you need to just grind it out. Work harder, you guys. Keep at it. I know it's hard. You can do it. Keep going. That would be you. All of you would be like, oh, thank you. I needed that. You would all be grateful if I said that.
because you're just giving us permission to do what we're already doing, so to speak.
Exactly.
But
yeah, I'm just reinforcing the programming that's already there. You're like, sweet, consistent voice. I got it. I'll just keep going. Yeah. What I'm saying is to try to get you off a hamster wheel is very hard to stop that momentum.
Yeah. And the sad thing is we just accept it. You know, I have time off planned in May, but I know myself. I don't step away. And I tell people, oh no, it's not you. It's me. Don't worry about it. It's not that I don't trust you to do your job. I just don't know how to disconnect.
And that's why my encouragement to you is, I mean, for me to do what I did, it took me 10 years of practice before I could do what I did. I'm not saying it's going to take every 10 years. It just took me 10 years to say, I'm just taking the month off. That was inconceivable 10 years before. That's why I say take an hour. Start small. Take 1 hour. Set a timer if you want and just see, can I do whatever I feel like doing as long as I have no expectation of the outcomes? It doesn't hurt other people or me. I'm going to follow it till I feel like I'm done doing whatever I feel like I'm doing. And then I'm going to repeat the process. I'm going to do that for 1 hour straight. And so, Reese, if that means you show up to the gym, you get under the bench press, you do half of one set, and you're like, I do not want to be here, then walk away. Literally go home, go do whatever, or wherever you want to go next. See what that's like. Follow that. Give yourself permission to periodically just do the thing you feel like doing.
Now I have cheeseburger in my head because you mentioned it earlier. So.
Then I think it's time.
You're not the only one.
We got earwormed by Shane. Everybody's going to get a cheeseburger.
Yes. I'm whispering. It's all part of my grand manipulation to increase cheeseburger sales. JD has an interesting question. What has to be true to take a month off? Ooh, that's kind of like a, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Zen Cohen, you just issued to the group.
I've taken that thought process, not just with that, but with a lot of other things to help cancel limiting beliefs. Where we say, oh, well, that's just not going to work because of this person or that person, or saying, well, what has to be true for us to do that? And even looking at that in strategic planning and say, hey, what does it have to mean for us to open another store, another division, hire another pharmacist or whatever that may be? What must be true to get us there?
Excellent. Yep.
I like that.
Another great question to ask yourself is, if I wasn't afraid, I would. If I wasn't afraid, I would.
And that's great, Shane, because all of our greatest accomplishments are on the other side of fear.
I just want you all to experiment with the idea that you aren't here to suffer, that you're actually here to enjoy. What if that was the reason you were put on this planet, is to enjoy, not suffer? If that was the purpose, how might you make different decisions? And they're all just experiments. Pay attention to how you feel, pay attention to what happens. Be attentive to, searching for synchronicities. Don't have expectations. Don't try to plan it out. Just allow it to unfold. Okay, any other comments or questions? I think we're nearing the end of our time here. Going once. Going twice. Sold. All right. Thanks, everybody. Great chatting. Be well. Try that experiment this week. Next week, we're going to check on how that went for you. That's going to be one of the first things we do next week, is how did it go for you? Hey, bye, everybody.
Goodbye.